Eugene Gladstone O'Neill, born October 16th, 1888, died November 27th, 1953.
I am not interested in plays which are merely about the relationship of man to man. I am interested in nothing except the relation of man to God.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with United Cerebral Palsy, presents Salute to Eugene O'Neill, a transcribed tribute to the great American dramatist. Starring in the order of their appearance, Shirley Booth, Oscar Homolka, Aline McMahon, Ed Latimer, Carl Malden, Roddy McDowell, Joan Loring, Parker Fennelly, Helen Hayes, Geraldine Page, and Franco Tone, with narration by Joseph Cotton and commentary by Brooks Atkinson, drama critic of the New York Times. Mr. Atkinson.
During the next hour, you will hear some significant scenes from a number of the dramas by Eugene O'Neill. As one of the many people associated with this broadcast, I speak to you out of respect and affection for him and his work. He died last November. Since he had been afflicted with Parkinson's disease for 10 years and was getting progressively worse with no hope of relief or recovery, his death was no doubt a welcome release from suffering. In view of his rare gifts, the success of his plays throughout the world, and his amiability and attractiveness as a person, the last 10 years of his life were painful. They were, in fact, a terrible vindication of the tragic theme that ran through all his dramas. His own life proved that he had been telling the truth. But to me, the news of his death was profoundly sorrowful. It meant that a giant writer had dropped off the earth and that our theater had become a more commonplace community. It was hard to become reconciled to the fact that so much passion and creative turbulence had been stilled forever. For no other dramatist of our time wrote over such a long period of time with so much passion. He was an epic dramatist. His ideas seemed to be inexhaustible. The older he grew, the more massive and Promethean his dramatic projects became. Strange Interlude, Morning Becomes Electra, and The Iceman Cometh were marathon plays that took about 5 hours to perform. His uncompleted cycle of dramas about the history of an American family was to be 8 or 9 plays in length. By the time he had matured as a craftsman, he had long since lost interest in the conventional forms and polite conveniences of after-dinner theater. To him, the theater was not an amusement, but a serious art form. He was the man who rescued the American theater from provincialism and mediocrity, and made possible the serious work that has been done in it in the last 30 years. Although opinions differ about the quality of the artistry and thought of his dramas, everyone agrees, I think, that he is the father of the modern American drama. He was a pioneer. He had size, stature, daring, and strength. Nothing could divert him from his primary interest in great themes and exploratory ideas. He won the Pulitzer Prize 3 times, and he also won the Nobel Prize, the supreme honor for a modern writer. He died in a hotel in Boston with a view overlooking the Charles River, tenderly cared for by his wife, Carlotta, and a nurse who was devoted to him. Although those last few years were lonely, he was surrounded with love. Now we come to the plays. The first one on this program is a scene from Anna Christie, which was produced originally in 1921. But suppose we let O'Neill's own words set the scene for us.
From Anna Christie, Shirley Booth as Anna, Oscar Homolka as Chris, Aline McMahon as Marthy, and Ed Latimer as Johnny. Narration by Joseph Cotton.
After I quit going to sea, I stayed behind at Jimmy the Priest, the saloon and rooming house at Fulton Street and North River. It was awful. The house was almost coming down, and the principal house wreckers were the vermin. I was absolutely down financially those days, and you can get an idea of the kind of room I had when I tell you that the rent was $3 a month. I had Crisp as a roommate. He had sailed the sea until he was sick at the mention of it, but it was the only work he knew.
Hello, Johnny.
Well, speak of the devil. Chris.
Johnny, have a drink on me. I got money, plenty money.
You got half a snootful now.
I just come ashore. Give us a drink, Johnny. I was little drunk. Not much. Just very good.
What's your pleasure, Chris?
Whiskey. Ah, skull.
Where are you in from this time?
Norfolk. Oh, we make slow voyage. Dirty weather. Just fog, fog, fog all time. Oh, it's family entrance. Oh, I go open, Johnny. It is Marty. She come with me.
What are you trying to do, Dutch? Keep me standing out there all day?
I'm sorry, Marty. I talked to Johnny. I forget. You sit down. What are you going to take for drink?
Give me a scoop of lager and ale.
Lager and ale for Marty, Johnny. Whiskey for me.
Right. Hey, Chris, I just remembered. Here's a letter for you. From St. Paul, Minnesota. Care of the saloon. Lady's writing.
Oh, then it came from my daughter, Anna. She lived there.
Hey, don't get it in the beer.
I don't get letter from Anna. Oh, must be year.
Down the hatch.
Ay, Jiminy.
What's that for?
My Anna says she's coming here right away. She got sick on job in St. Paul, she say. You know, Marty, I don't see my Anna since she was a little girl in Sweden, 5 years old. She must be 20 years old, by Jove.
You haven't seen her in 15 years?
No. When she was little girl, I was bossing on Windjammer. I never get home only a few times a year. Oh, I'm fool sailor fellow. My woman, Anna's mother, she got tired wait all time, Sweden for me, when I don't never come home. She come this country, Minnesota, live with her cousins on the farm. Then, when her mother die, I think, oh, it's better Anna live on farm with cousins than she don't know that old devil sea. She don't know father like me.
Oh, customer. I'll see you, Chris.
She says she come right away. She got job nurse girl in St. Paul. I don't want for her get job now. I want her to stay with me.
Yeah?
Marty.
What?
Well, now...
I'm wise to what's in the back of your neck. You want to get rid of me now, huh? Now that she's coming? Listen, Dutchie. Don't start nothing you can't finish.
I don't start nothing, Marty.
Oh, you're a scream.
I don't see nothing for laughing.
Yeah, you're trying to kid Marty Owen, huh? Well, I'm wise to the game, up, down, and sideways. I know barge men 20 years. I've been born and dragged up on the waterfront for nothing. You think I'll make trouble? Huh? Not me. I'm quitting you, see? I'm sick of you. Plenty of other guys on other barges. cheer up, Dutchie. I'll be out of your way before she comes. Good riddance to both of us.
You was good girl, Marty.
Good girl. Well, you treated me square yourself, so it's 50-50. Blow me to another scoop, huh? I'll drink your kid's health for you.
By golly, I celebrate now. We drink, eh? I celebrate because Anna's coming home. I bet she's fine, strong gal. Pretty little devil. Well, living on farm make her like that. And I bet you, someday she marry good, steady land fella here in East. Have home all of her own. Have kids. And then I'm old grandfather, by golly. And I go visiting them every time I get near in port. I celebrate that. Johnny,
hey,
whiskey!
Look, you're soused to the ears, Dutchie. You get out and put a feed into you, huh? It'll sober you up.
No, I
now,
celebrate.
Listen, you old nut. You don't know what time your kid's liable to show up. You want to be sober when she comes, don't you?
Oh, by golly, yes.
Yeah, she's right, Chris. Good beef stew will fix you up. Go on around the corner.
All right. I'll be back soon, Marty.
How about another scoop, Johnny?
Yeah, sure. Oh, hold it. Well?
It's the lady's entrance, ain't it?
Yeah. What do you want?
You gonna let me in? Give me a whiskey, ginger ale on the side, and don't be stingy.
Shall I serve it in a pail?
That suits me right down to the ground.
All right. Here you are. 2 bits.
I needed that bed, all right.
Sure. You look all in. Been on a bat?
No. Traveling day and a half on that dirty coach. I thought I'd never get here.
Where'd you come from, huh?
St. Paul. Out in Minnesota.
So you're...
What are you laughing at? Me?
No, honest, kid. I was thinking of something else.
Oh, well, I wouldn't blame you. I guess I do look rotten. Just out of the hospital 2 weeks. I'm going to have another shot. Have something on me?
Sure, I will. Thanks. Hey, Johnny! Service!
The same for me.
And me.
Right.
Why don't you come and sit here with me? Come on, be sociable. I'm a dead stranger. I ain't spoke a word with no one since the day before yesterday.
Sure thing.
Here you are, ladies.
Well, skull. Here's how.
Here's luck.
There ain't nothing wrong with me, is there? You're staring at me hard enough.
I ain't gotta look much. I got your number the minute you stepped in the door.
Well, ain't you smart? I got yours, too, without no trouble. You're me 40 years from now. That's you.
Is that so? Well, I'll tell you straight. What are you and me scrapping over, huh? Let's cut it off. Forget it?
Oh, sure. I ain't looking for trouble. I gotta meet someone. I guess my nerves is on edge after that rotten trip.
You said you was just out of the hospital.
2 weeks ago. The joint I was in out in St. Paul got raided. The judge gave all us girls 30 days. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't eat or sleep or nothing. I never could stand being caged up nowheres. I got sick and they had to send me to the hospital. It was nice there. I was sorry to leave it.
Did you say you gotta meet someone here?
Oh, yeah, but not what you mean. It's my old man. Honest. It's funny, too. I ain't seen him since I was a kid. I don't even know what he looks like. He's a janitor of some building here now. He used to be a sailor.
Janitor? Chris Christopherson?
Yeah. Yeah, that's him. I'm Anna Christopherson. That's my real name. Only out there, I call myself Anna Christie. So you know him, huh?
I've seen him around for years.
Hey, what's he like? Tell me honest.
He's short.
Oh, I don't care what he looks like. I mean, what kind is he?
Look, he's as good an old guy as ever walked on 2 feet.
Yeah?
Where'd you get the idea he was a janitor?
Oh, he wrote me he was himself.
Well, he was lying. He ain't. He's the captain of a barge. 5 men under him.
A barge? What kind of a barge?
Coal, mostly.
A coal barge?
Oh, I knew something's bound to turn out wrong. It always does with me.
Well, that puts my idea of his giving me a rest on the bum.
What do you mean?
I suppose he lives on the boat, don't he?
Well, sure. Can't you live on it, too?
Me? On a dirty coal barge? What do you think I am?
What do you know about barges, huh? I'll bet you ain't never seen one. It's what comes of his bringing you up inland, away from the old devil's sea. Where you'd be safe.
His bringing me up? Is that what he tells people? I like his nerve. He let them cousins keep me on their farm and work me to death like a dog.
Well, I heard him say a farm was the best place for a kid.
Oh, yeah. I had to slave for all of them. I was only a poor relation. They treated me worse than they dare treat a hired girl. It was one of the sons. The youngest. After that, I hated him so I'd have killed them all if I'd stayed. So I run away. St. Paul.
I heard old Chris talking about you being a nurse girl out there. What was that, a bluff?
Not on your life. It was true for 2 years. I didn't go wrong all in one jump. It was all men's fault, the whole business. It was men on the farm ordering and beating me and giving me the wrong start. And then, when I was a nurse, it was men hanging around bothering me, trying to see what they could get. Now it's men all the time. I hate them. Every mother's son of them. Don't you?
I don't know. There's good ones and bad ones, kid. You just had a run of bad luck with them, that's all. Your old man now, old Chris, he's a good one.
You'll have to show me.
By golly, Johnny, that grub is good. Martin Beck?
Sure. And another tramp with her.
That's him now, huh? Hello, old Chris. I'm going now, see? I just finished my beer. This is her, your Anna. You treat her right, see?
Sure, sure.
She's been sick. Uh-huh. Well, so long. See you later.
Thanks.
Anna?
Hello, Father. I just got here a little while ago.
It's good to see you after all them years, Anna.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too.
Anna Lilia. Anna Lilia.
What's that, Swedish? I don't know it. I had an awful trip coming here. I had to sit up in the coach all night, and I couldn't get no sleep hardly. And then I had a hard time finding this place. I'd never been to New York before, you know, and I...
You know, you are awful pretty girl, Anna. I bet old man you see fall in love with you, by Jiminy.
Cut it out. You talk the same as they all do.
Ain't no harm for your father talk that way, Anna.
No. Only it's funny to see you and not remember nothing. You're like a stranger.
Yeah, I suppose. I never come home, only a few times when you was kid in Sweden. You don't remember that.
No. Why didn't you never come home them days? Why didn't you never come out west to see me?
I think after your mother died, when I was away on voyage, it's better for you. You don't never see me. No. I don't know, Anna, why I never come home Sweden in old year. I won't come home, end of every voyage. I want to see your mother, you, when you was born. But I don't go. I sign on other ships. I don't know why. But that's way with most sailor fella, Anna. That old devil sea make them crazy fools with their dirty tricks. It's so.
Then you think the sea's to blame for everything, huh? Well, you're still working on it, ain't you? Spite of all you used to write me about hating it? That dame was here told me you was the captain of a coal barge. You wrote me you was a janitor of a building.
Oh, I work on land. Long time as a janitor. Just a short time ago, I got this job. Because I was sick. Need open air.
Sick? You?
And, Anna, this ain't real sailor job. This ain't real boat on sea. She's just old tub. Like piece of land with house on it that float. Job on her ain't no sea job, no. You rest all you want, by Jiminy. You don't have to work as nurse girl no more. You stay with me.
Then you're really glad to see me? Honest?
Anna, you stay with me. I don't see you for a long time. You don't forget that. And I'm getting old. I got no one in the world but you.
Thanks. It sounds good to hear someone talk to me that way. Say, though, if you're so lonely, it's funny why you ain't got married again.
Oh, I love your mother too much. Forever do that, Anna.
I don't remember nothing about her. What was she like? Tell me.
I tell you all about everything. And you tell me all things happened to you, but not here now. This ain't good place for young girl anyway. Only no good sailor fella come here for get drunk. You come with me, Anna. You need lie down. Get rest.
Hey, where are you going?
Come, we get on board.
You mean on board your barge? Uh-uh. Not me.
What do you mean, Anna?
You think that's a good place for a young girl like me, a coal barge?
Yes, I think. Oh, you don't know how nice it's on barge, Anna. Mm. Tug come and we get towed out on voyage. Just water all around and sun and fresh air and good grub for make you strong, healthy girl. You see many things you don't see before. You get moonlight at night, maybe. See steamer pass, see schooner make sail. You need rest like that. You work too hard for a young girl already. You need vacation, yes?
Well, it sounds good to hear you tell it. I'd sure like a trip on the water, all right. It's the barge idea has me stopped. Well, I'll go down with you and have a look. Maybe I'll take a chance. Gee, I'd do anything once.
I get suitcase. We go now, eh?
Well, what's the rush? Wait a second. Gee, I'm thirsty.
Oh, I'm sorry, Anna. What do you think you like for a drink, eh?
Well, I'll take... I don't know. What do they got here?
Well, I don't think they got much fancy drink for a young girl in this place, Anna. Ginger ale, sarsaparilla, maybe.
Make it a sass, then.
I tell you, Anna, we celebrate, yes? This one time because we meet after many years. Huh? A little. They got good port wine, Anna. It's good for you. And I think little bit forgive your appetite. It ain't strong neither. One glass don't go to your head, I promise.
All right. I'll take port.
I go get him. Hey, Johnny!
Well, who's the blonde?
That is Anna, Johnny.
Your daughter, Anna?
Yes. Don't you think she's a pretty girl, Johnny?
Yeah. A peach. What's the matter with her?
Matter?
Got her head down on the table, like she's crying.
Oh, Anna's tired, that's all. Give me drink for take back. One port wine for Anna. She celebrate this one time with me. And a small beer for me.
Small beer, huh? She's reforming you already.
You bet. Anna, you're right.
Oh, sure.
You look tired, Anna. Well, I make you take long rest. Now, come, you drink wine. It put new life in you. So, skål. You know that Swedish word?
Skål? Skål. I guess I know that word all right.
And now again, Mr. Brooks Atkinson.
Now we come to Desire Under the Elms, produced in 1924. A gnarled and probing drama about life on a New England farm, it is, in my opinion, one of O'Neill's two masterpieces.
From Desire Under the Elms, Carl Malden as Ephraim Cabot, narration by Joseph Cotton.
First was the farm, the land, stony, hard, and flinty to the plow. And then came the men and poured their blood into the earth and ground their lives to gray smoothness against the stones of the field. Under the giant elms that stretched to the sky, desire filled the gaunt house, the lust for land, for power, and between man and woman, all shaded into one, all intermingled, the one for the other. Now, stretched on his bed in the darkness, Ephraim Cabot lies beside his wife.
The farm needs a son. Me and the farm has got to beget a son. Listen, Abby. When I come here 50-odd year ago, I was just 20 and the strongest and hardest you ever seen. Well, this place was nothing but fields of stones. Folks laughed when I took it. They couldn't know what I knowed when you can make corn sprout out of stones. God's living in you. They weren't strong enough for that. They reckoned God was easy. They laughed. They don't laugh no more. Some died hereabout. Some went west and died. They're all underground for following after an easy God. Well, God ain't easy. And I growed hard. Folks kept all as a saying he's a hard man, like it was sinful to be hard. So at last I said back at him, well, then, by thunder, you'll get me hard and see how you like it. But I give in to weakness once. It was after I'd been here 2 years. I got weak, despairful. There were so many stones. There was a party leaving, giving up, going west. I joined them. We tracked on and on. We come to broad meadows, plains where the soil was black and rich as gold. Nary a stone. Easy. You'd only need to plow and sow and then set and smoke your pipe and watch things grow. I could have been a rich man. But something in me fit me and fit me, the voice of God saying, this ain't worth nothing to me. Get you back to Hum. I got a fear of that voice, and I lit out back to Hum here, leaving my claim and crops to who'd ever mind to take them, eh? I actually give up what was rightfully mine. God's hard, not easy. God's in the stones. Build my church on a rock out of stones, and I'll be in them. That's what he meant to Peter. Stones. I picked them up and piled them into walls. You can read the years of my life in them walls. Every day a hefted stone climbing over the hills, up and down, fencing in the fields that were mine, where I'd made things grow out of nothing, like the will of God, like the servant of his hand. It wasn't easy. It was hard. And he made me hard for it. All the time, I kept getting lonesomer. I took a wife. She bore Simeon and Peter. She was a good woman. She worked hard. We was married 20 years. She never knowed me. She helped, but she never knowed what she was helping. I was all as lonesome. She died. After that, it wasn't so lonesome for a spell. I lost count of the years. I had no time to fool away counting. The farm growed. It was all mine. When I thought of that, I didn't feel lonesome. But you can't hitch your mind to one thing day and night. I took another wife, Eben's ma. She was pretty, but soft. She tried to be hard. She couldn't. She never knowed mean or nothing. It was lonesomer than God's hell with her. After a matter of 16-odd years, she died. I lived with the boys. They hated me because I was hard. But I hated them because they were soft. They coveted the farm without knowing what it meant. It made me bitter and wormwood. It aged me, them coveting what I'd made for mine. And then this spring the call come. The voice of God crying out my wilderness and my lonesomeness to go out and seek and find. Abby, I sought you and I found you. You were my rose of Sharon. Your eyes are Are you any wiser for all I've told you? You don't know nothing or never will if you don't have a son to redeem you. You give me the chills sometimes. It's cold in this house. It's uneasy. There's things poking about in the dark, in the corners. I'm going out. Down where it's restful, where it's warm, down to the barn. I can talk to the cows. They know. They know the farm and me. They'll give me peace. Uh,
growing ripe on the bough. God Almighty, call from the dark.
And now we'd like you to meet the medical director and head of the National Program Division of United Cerebral Palsy, Dr. Glidden L. Brooks.
Today we are paying tribute to a great American dramatist, Eugene O'Neill. During his later years, O'Neill was stricken with Parkinson's disease, a form of palsy. To put it as simply as possible, he suffered from progressive involvement of that part of the brain which controls and coordinates certain bodily movements. For example, this illness caused his hands to jerk convulsively. This made it impossible for him to write in longhand, and so the pen of America's Nobel Prize-winning playwright was reluctantly put aside. It is particularly significant, I think, that this man, who did so much to widen the horizons of man's thinking, should now be assisting in still another attempt to broaden our knowledge and understanding. For the last 10 years of his life, Eugene O'Neill was imprisoned in a body which would not obey his will. This is perhaps the most terrible affliction of all, to have capacities and to know you have them and yet not be able to use them. In America today, hundreds of thousands of the cerebral palsied know from bitter experience what this means. Many of them cannot write. Many cannot speak. Many cannot even walk. It is a challenge to our research scientists, to our physicians, to our community leaders, and to ourselves. And that is why United Cerebral Palsy is now conducting its fifth national campaign during this month of May. Our goal is $8.5 million. It is imperative that we raise this amount to carry on our work of education, service, and research. The welfare of the cerebral palsy depends upon it. With the continued support of the American people, United Cerebral Palsy will intensify its efforts to help as many as possible of the more than 500,000 cerebral palsied children and adults throughout America.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. And now again, Mr. Brooks Atkinson, drama critic of the New York Times.
Although O'Neill's dramas are grim and stormy, he was a mild, gentle person with a warm and sociable sense of humor. Our Wilderness, produced by the Theater Guild in 1933, is his only comedy. It is a comic dramatization of some of the foibles and intellectual growing pains of his youth, and is based largely, I believe, on the home life of a family in Connecticut that he used to visit as a boy, although there must be also echoes of the life of the O'Neill family that summered in Connecticut. Our Wilderness is dedicated to O'Neill's old friend, George G. Nathan, with this affectionate comment, quote, to George G. Nathan, who once upon a time, in peg-top trousers, went the pace that kills along the road to ruin, close quote. The characters and story of this comedy came to O'Neill in a dream. Although he was working on another tragic drama at the time, he put it aside and wrote Our Wilderness in about 5 weeks while it was fresh in his mind. It is unique in the literature of O'Neill.
From Our Wilderness, starring Roddy McDowell as Richard and Joan Loring as Muriel. Narration by Mr. Joseph Cotton.
Richard was 17. A year when the last of the boys struggles with the first of the man. A year of sensitivity, of shyness, and of incredible blunders followed by agonies of humiliation. It started when he wrote a poem and then a letter to the girl next door. It ended when, in a fury of self-dramatized rebellion, he spent the evening at the Pleasant Beach House, an establishment known to serve spirituous liquors, in Richard's case, beer. But after every night, there is a morning. And after that morning, another night. This is the beach. The new moon casts a soft, mysterious, caressing light over everything. Richard sits waiting, kicking at the sand restlessly, twirling his straw hat with the bright colored band around on his finger.
It must be 9. I can hear the town clock strike. It's so still tonight. Gee, I bet Maya'd have fit when she found out I slipped out. But I'd catch it when I get back. If only Muriel turns up. Gosh, I wish she'd come. I shouldn't be so anxious. I suppose it's all right when you're really in love. Think of something else. That'll make the time pass quicker. Where was I this time last night? Waiting outside the Pleasant Beach House. Well, if I get her. Now when Muriel's coming is a fine time to think of... about who hugged and kissed her. Not until I was drunk I didn't. Then it was only all showing off, darn fool. And I didn't go with her, even if she was pretty. She wasn't pretty. She was all painted up. She was everything... Muriel's a million times prettier anyway. Muriel and I... But that'll be beautiful. Oh, but I oughtn't to think about that yet. It's not right. Gee, it's a beautiful night. As if it were a special night for Muriel and me. Gee, I love tonight. I love the sand and the trees and the grass and the water and the sky and the moon. It's all in me and I'm in it. Oh, God, it is so beautiful.
Oh, Dick?
Oh, hello. Is it 9 already? Gosh, time passes when you're thinking.
I bet you've forgotten I was even coming.
Oh, no, I hadn't forgotten, honest. But I got to thinking about life.
Dick, you come here to me. I'm afraid to go out in the bright moonlight where anyone might see me.
Oh, there you go again. You're always scared of life.
Dick Miller, I do think you've an awful nerve saying that after all the risks I went to make this date. I've got a good mind to go right home and never speak to you again.
Oh, no, Mira, don't go. Please. I didn't mean anything like that. Please. Honest, I didn't.
I don't believe you. You've got to swear to me.
I swear.
Well, all right, then. I'll believe you.
Oh, gosh, Muriel, it sure is wonderful to be with you again.
I'm glad it makes you happy.
Can't I... Won't you let me kiss you now, please?
No, you mustn't. Don't.
Oh, why can't I? You're always so afraid. Aren't you ever going to let me?
I will. Sometime.
When?
Soon, maybe.
Tonight, will you?
I'll see.
Promise?
I promise, maybe.
All right, now, you remember, you promised. You don't realize what I've been going through for you. And what I'm in for sneaking out. And for what I did last night. What your letter made me do.
What did my letter make you do?
Oh, it's too long a story. And let the dead past bury its dead. Ugh, what I'll catch when Pa gets hold of me.
Tell me, Dick. Begin at the beginning and tell me.
Well, after your father left our place, I caught holy hell from Pa.
Dick, you mustn't swear.
Oh, hell's the only word to describe it.
I'm so awfully sorry, Dick.
I wanted to die. I sat and brooded about death, and finally I made up my mind I'd kill myself.
Dick, you didn't...
I did, too. But suicide is the act of a coward. That's what stopped me.
Oh.
I thought I might as well forget all and drown my sorrows. After it was dark, I sneaked out and went to a low dive I know about.
Dick Miller, I don't believe you ever.
Well, you just asked them at the Pleasant Beach House if I didn't. They won't forget me in a hurry.
You went there? Huh? That's a terrible place. Pa says it ought to be closed by the police.
I said it's a dive, didn't I? It's a secret house of shame. and they let me into a secret room behind the bar room. There wasn't anyone there but a Princeton senior I know, fullback on the football team. And he had two chorus girls from New York with him, and they were all drinking champagne.
Dick Miller, I hope you didn't.
Well, I had a highball by myself. Then I noticed one of the girls looking at me.
Oh?
And she asked if I wouldn't drink champagne with them.
And did you?
Why shouldn't I? When you told me in your letter that you'd never see me again.
But you ought to have known Pa made me write it.
Oh, but I didn't know that then. Her name was Belle. She kept smoking one cigarette after another. Oh, but that's nothing for a chorus girl.
And then what happened?
We kept on drinking champagne. And then she came and sat on my lap and kissed me.
It was
only all in fun. Finally, I said goodnight and I came home.
And did you kiss her?
No, I did not.
You did too.
No.
You're lying and you know it. You did kiss her. I hate you. I wish you were dead. I'm going home this minute. I never want to lay eyes on you again. And this time I
mean... Muriel, now wait. Listen.
I don't want to listen. I'll... Let me go.
No.
If you don't, I'll bite your hand.
Look, please, I won't let you go.
You've got to let me go.
You never... Ouch! Oh, all right, then. You go ahead if you want to. I hate you, too. I'll go and see Belle.
Well, go and see her if that's the kind of girl you like. What do I care? And I suppose you'll tell me you didn't fall in love with her.
I should say not. What do you take me for?
Well, how do you know what you did if you drank so much champagne?
I kept my head with her.
Well, then you didn't love her?
I didn't. I swear, Muriel, I couldn't. I love you.
Well, then I still love you.
Come on. Sit down here, why don't you?
It's getting late.
Oh, it's not near half past yet. Muriel, you said that you'd let me...
I said maybe.
Please, Muriel. I want to sew.
Will it wash off her kisses? And make you forget you ever... For always?
I should say so.
Then, all right, Dick. Oh. The moon is beautiful, isn't it?
Not as beautiful as you. Nothing is. Won't it be wonderful when we're married?
Oh, yes. But it's so long to wait.
Perhaps I needn't go to Yale. Perhaps Pa will give me a job, and soon I'll be making enough to
support... perhaps you'd better do what your Pa thinks best. And I'd like you to be at Yale.
Oh.
Do you think your Pa will punish you awful?
I don't know, and I don't care. Nothing could have kept me from seeing you tonight. Not if I'd had to crawl over red-hot coals. You have me between the hands of you. You are my love. My own soul's hand. More dear than mine own soul. More beautiful than God.
Shh. It's wrong to say that.
Gosh, I love you. Darling.
Oh, I love you too. Sweetheart. Where will we go on our honeymoon, Dick? To Niagara Falls?
That dump where all the city fools go, I should say not. We'll go to some far-off, wonderful place. Somewhere out on the long trail. The trail that's always new. On the road to Mandalay. We'll watch the dawn come up out of China like thunder.
Oh, that'll be wonderful, won't it?
again, Mr. Atkinson.
Now we come to O'Neill's supreme masterpiece, Morning Becomes Electra, put on in 1931. Taking the Orestes legend from Greek drama, O'Neill applied it to New England life of the Civil War period. He was interested in the contrast between the religious interpretation of tragedy in Greek culture and the psychological interpretation that interested him in American life at that time. Originally, O'Neill wrote it as three plays that were to be put on successive evenings. When he got into rehearsals, he found, for many reasons, that it would have to be done as one long play that would run from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 11 in the evening, with an intermission long enough for dinner. I wonder whether the New York Theater of 1954 has the resources to stage a tragedy of such massive size, ferocity, and grandeur.
From Morning Becomes Electra, Helen Hayes as Lavinia, French O'Tone as Peter, Geraldine Page as Hazel, Parker Fennelly as Seth. Narrated by Joseph Cotton.
The ancient Greeks had a legend about a king who returned from the wars to be slain by the lover of his wife. The king's son and daughter, to avenge their father's death, plot to kill their own mother and are themselves destroyed. On this legend, O'Neill built his play. The time is the end of the American Civil War, and the place is New England. Instead of a king, there is a returning general, and his avenging children are called Orin and Lavinia. As the scene begins, Orin the son is already dead by his own hand. Lavinia the daughter, last of the family, is in the garden, and Seth, the old gardener, watches her.
I should be picking my flowers again, like a ma used to, only worse. She's got every room in the house full of them already. I hoped she'd stop that once the funeral was over. There won't be a one left in my garden. It's a darn queer thing for a soldier to kill himself cleaning his gun, folks are saying. They'll be pretty shy of her now. Manon has come to mean sudden death to them. But Vinny's able for them. They'll never get her to show anything.
Seth?
Last of them. Clean Manon strain.
Take these flowers. Give them to Hannah. Tell her to set them inside. I want the house to be full of flowers. Peter is coming, and I want everything to be pretty and cheerful.
I see you setting out here on the steps when I got up at 5 this morning. And every morning, since your brother's been gone. Ain't you been getting no sleep?
Sleep?
How'd you like it if I hauled out one of them sofas for you to lie on?
No thanks, Seth. I'm waiting for Peter. Seth, why didn't you tell me to go in the house and lie down? You understand, don't you? You've been with us, Manon, so long you know there's no rest in this house built as a temple of hate and death.
Don't you try to stay here, Vinny. You marry Peter and get clear.
I'm going to marry him. I'm going away with him and forget this house and everything that ever happened in it. I'll close it up and leave it in the sun and rain to die. The portraits of the Manons will rot on the walls and the ghosts will fade back into death and the Manons will be forgotten. I'm the last. Then they're finished. Thank God.
Vinny, there's Hazel coming. Evening, Hazel.
Evening, sir.
What do you want? I have a lot to attend to.
It won't take me long to say what I've come to say, Vinny. It's a lie about Orin killing himself by accident. I know it is. He meant to.
I should think you'd be the last one to accuse Orin.
Oh, I'm not accusing him. I'm accusing you. You drove him to it. Oh, I know I can't prove it. But terrible things must have happened. And you're to blame for them somehow. I know there's something. And so do you. Something that was driving Orin crazy. Poor Orin.
Don't do that.
I'm sorry. I didn't come to talk about Orin.
What did you come for?
About Peter.
You leave Peter and me alone.
I won't. You are not going to marry Peter and ruin his life. You can't. Don't you see that he could never be happy with you and that you'll only drag him into this terrible thing, whatever it is, and make him share it?
There is no terrible thing.
It started already, his being made unhappy through you.
You're lying.
He fought with Mother last night when she tried to talk to him. The first time he ever did such a thing, he left home and went to the hotel to stay. He said he'd never speak to Mother or me again. We three have been so happy. It's broken Mother's heart. All she does is sit and cry. Oh, Vinny, you can't do it. Peter would get to hate you in the end.
No.
Do you want to take the risk of driving Peter to do what Oren did? He might if he ever discovered the truth.
What truth? Discover what?
I don't know. But you know. Oh, look in your heart and ask your conscience before God if you ought to marry Peter.
Yes. Before God. Before anything. You leave me alone. Go away or I'll get Oren's pistol and kill you.
Oh, you are wicked. I believe you would. Oh, Vinny, what's made you like this?
Go away.
Vinny. All right. I'll go. I know in your heart you can't be dead to all honor and justice. You are Manon. At least you owe it to Peter to let him read what Oren had in that envelope. Oren asked me to make him read it before he married you. I've told Peter about that, Vinny.
The dead. Why can't the dead die?
Vinny.
Oh, I'll go by the back. I don't want him to meet me. I know you're suffering, Vinny, and I know your conscience will make you do what's right, and God will forgive you.
I'm not asking God or anybody for forgiveness. I forgive myself. I hope there is a hell for the good somewhere.
Oh, Vinny, you look terribly worn out. Haven't you slept? You had an awfully hard time of it. Never mind. We'll be married soon.
You'll love me and keep me from remembering?
You bet I will. Mm. First thing is to get you away from this darned house.
Yes. Love can't live in it. We'll go away and leave it. Forget the dead.
I can't move too far away to suit me.
Peter, I want to get married right away. I'm afraid. Would you marry me now, this evening? We can find a minister to do it. I can change my clothes in a second and put on the color you like. Marry me today, Peter. I'm afraid to wait.
Well, we couldn't. Wouldn't look right today, Oren. Out of respect for him. Can't see why you're so afraid of waiting. Nothing can happen, can it? Was there anything in what Oren wrote that would stop us from...
The dead coming between. They always would, Peter. You trust me with your happiness, but that means trusting the man and dead, and they're not to be trusted with love. I know them too well.
What are you talking about, Vinny? You make me think there was something.
No, nothing. No. No, don't think of that. Not yet. I want a little while of happiness in spite of all the dead. I've earned it. I've done enough. Listen, Peter, why must we wait? I want a moment of joy, of love, to make up for what's coming. I want it now. Can't you be strong, Peter? Can't you be simple and pure? Can't you forget sin and see that all love is beautiful? Kiss me. Hold me close. Hold me. Love me. Love me so much you'd murder anyone to have me. Our love will drive the dead away. It will shame them back into death. Love me. Love me. Now, always the dead between. It's no good trying anymore.
Vinny, you're talking crazy. You're not like that.
I can't marry you, Peter. You mustn't ever see me again.
Vinny, you can't. What's changed you like this? Is it what Oren wrote? What was it? He acted so queer about... What happened to you on the islands? Was it something there? Something to do with that native?
What? Yes, if you must know. I won't lie anymore. Oren suspected I loved him. And I had.
Vinny, You couldn't.
Why shouldn't I? I wanted him. I wanted to learn love from him. Love that wasn't a sin.
Then Mother and Hazel were right about you. You are bad at heart. No wonder Arendt killed himself. God, I hope you'll be punished.
Peter, it's a lie. I didn't.
Goodbye, Peter. I'm bound here to the man and dead.
Don't go in the house, Vinnie. Don't.
Don't be afraid. I'm not going the way Mother and Orin went. That's escaping punishment. And there's no one left to punish me. I'm the last Manon. I've got to punish myself. I'll never go out or see anyone. I'll have the shutters nailed close so no sunlight can ever get in. I'll live alone with the dead and keep their secrets and let them hound me until the curse is paid out and the last Manon is let die. I know they'll see to it that I live for a long time. It takes the Manons to punish themselves for being born. Seth?
Yeah?
So now go and close the shutters and nail them tight.
Yep.
And tell Hannah to throw out all the flowers.
This is Joseph Cotton again. Eugene O'Neill leaves to us of the theater, to America, and to the world his plays. Their continuing life will be his most appropriate memorial.
United Cerebral Palsy wishes to express its grateful appreciation to Mr. Brooks Atkinson, Mrs. Eugene O'Neill, and to all the great stars who appeared transcribed on this program. Shirley Booth, Oscar Homolka, Aline McMahon, Ed Latimer, Carl Malden, Roddy McDowell, Joan Loring, Parker Fennelly, Helen Hayes, Geraldine Page, Francho Tone, and Joseph Cotton. One and all have given their time and talent to help America's cerebral palsy. It is our sincere belief that in helping this cause, they have paid fitting tribute to Eugene O'Neill. For the dramatist's great concern was for the fate of the individual man, his pain, his loneliness, his longing. When we help the cerebral palsied, we help to ease the suffering of thousands, help children to avoid the lonely life of the shut-in, help to fulfill the longing that the palsied share with all of us for the fulfillment of being self-supporting, of having friends, of making use of our abilities. Please help to further this great work. Give generously as you can. Send your contribution to your local United Cerebral Palsy affiliate. Program staff included for United Cerebral Palsy, Edwin Bronner. For NBC, Marilyn Kemmerly. Script, Alan Lewis and Ernest Kinoy. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Gene Hamilton.
Tonight, hear The Big Sound, a special musical review on the NBC Radio Network.